What's up, all? Aaron, but not that Aaron, here to tell you about Sif Pop Writer's Room. For the past several years, there have been a growing amount of writers for SifPop.com providing best ever challenges, movie reviews, themes, legacies, connections, and so much more. Sif Pop Writer's Room is where that all comes together, giving a voice to those words that you read. And on the show, every week is excellent, getting to chat such a wide variety of movies with a wide variety of movie lovers, and I'm really having a lot of fun with the show, and I just think that you would too. So check out Sif Pop Writer's Room wherever you listen to your podcast, and we'll see you over there. Just remember to knock first.
Brad Moist, I need your title, please, because I don't have a business card anywhere on me.
Well, that's a funny thing. We don't really have titles at Goatee Records.
My guest is Brad Moist of Goatee Records.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?
I guess I would say senior A&R brand manager, marketing director, just because I've been there so long.
I don't want to assume that people know what A&R means, although I've had a couple of A&R legends on this podcast, but define it through your eyes. What does an A&R guy do?
A&R is artist and repertoire. It is finding an artist or if an artist is brought to you and helping them start their career, introducing them to managers and agents. If they have songs, working on those. If they don't, getting them with songwriters, working in the studio, working out deals with producers, engineers, the mixing, the mastering. At Goatee, that also means all creative elements, setting up photo shoots, working with graphic designers, hiring music video directors, anything creative at Goatee, at least, it falls under the A&R department. And brand management is really something that we started a long time ago when I was running Mono versus Stereo in a way to not have the A&R and the marketing departments fighting each other and basically just saying, well, who better to know the marketing of an artist than the A&R person? And so we kind of merged those two departments together into one role. We don't just hand the record off to a marketing department. We see it through the entire marketing phase, radio, publicity, the whole bang.
I'm jumping way ahead, but I love firsts, Brad. What was the first album with your name on it with the letters A&R next to it? What was your very first?
As A&R, it was a band called The Evan Anthem. The record was called Prologue, and it was the first release on Mono versus Stereo in September of 2003.
When was the first time your name was in an album credits?
I think it was Jennifer Knapp, The Collection. When I started Mono versus Stereo, I needed to do something for Goatee because Mono versus Stereo didn't have any releases yet. So Goatee put me in charge of special releases, compilations, things like that. And so I came up with this idea for Jennifer Knapp Best Of, but the idea was to let the fans pick the songs. And so what I did was create a website where fans went on and voted for their favorite Jennifer Knapp songs. And we took the top, I think it was 15 in order by votes, and made that the Best Of. And then when they got to pick the songs, they got to submit a testimony for their favorite song. And then we picked the best 15 testimonies and put that in the album packaging.
What was your number one song on there?
Oh, man. Jen's got just too many songs. The third record holds a special place just because that was the first record that I was at Goatee and that I got to see the creation of it as far as her career. There's a song in there called Say Won't You Say that was really awesome. Then we actually had two versions of that song. At the time we recorded, Michael Tate did guest vocals on it, but we were not allowed to release it on the record at that moment. And so we held it. And then on the Best Of, we put it on the second disc as sort of like a B-side.
Let's dig down into family. Where's your place of origin at?
Hershey, Pennsylvania.
If you and I have one day to, and you are the tour guide with your little tour hat on, probably a Penn State hat, but it'll be a tour hat. Where are we going to go and what are we going to eat?
Definitely need to take you to Chocolate World. And Hershey Park. It's a lot of fun. Just the story of Hershey's Chocolate and everything it's done for that community, for kids in a school there at Milton Hershey School. It's just remarkable how he started the company. So definitely take you to Chocolate World, learn how they make chocolate, get some sweets there. My favorite are anything Reese's, like the peanut butter cups and things like that.
Who is mom and dad?
Dad is Stanford Clare Moist Jr. I was originally supposed to be Stanford Clare Moist III. Luckily, that did not happen. My mom's Victoria. My mom is still living in Hershey, Pennsylvania, where my brother and his wife and three kids live. They're about 5 minutes apart. My brother's house is in the development where we grew up, so it's really kind of cool that he's there.
Dad's no longer with us. You were really close with him.
Yep. Passed away just at the end of last year, a couple of days after Christmas.
You miss him?
Yeah, especially during football season, man. A few years ago, my brother and I decided to start going to away Penn State games because we were having more fun. It's one thing when you go to Penn State and there's 110,000 Penn State fans there, but when you go to an away game, every person you see wearing Penn State gear is all of a sudden your best friend. And so we started doing that a few years ago. And so this weekend we went to a game in Wisconsin. And after my dad had passed, there was only like a few things of his that I wanted. And one of which was his Penn State graduation ring. He graduated in 1971. My mom gave that to me. And so I decided every game that I'm going to go to for the rest of my life, I'm going to take that ring with me and wear it. And so I wore it at the game on Saturday, and it was pretty special.
Where does faith come into focus for you?
I mean, I grew up in the church like a lot of people in Christian music. My mom and dad were believers, and we grew up in the church, and I grew up on Christian music, and I went to youth group and went to concerts and everything like that, and retreats and missions trips and the whole thing. But, you know, as you become an adult and you go through life's challenges and things like that, it really makes you decide what you believe, right? And I've definitely had my share of those, and it's tested it plenty of times, but I still hold fast in what I believe.
It's all you've known.
Correct.
Yep. So when does Christian music seep into it? Were you a music fan growing up? Dad play records, mom play records?
Early on, mom and dad played some music. They didn't play the stuff they grew up on. My mom obviously grew up on the Beatles. My dad was listening to Santana and Neil Diamond. But when they became believers, they started listening to Christian music. And for them, it was Steve Green and Sandy Patty. So I believe that my first concert ever was a Sandy Patty concert in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And I was taken up on stage to sing some song. And I mentioned this to Chris Hauser recently. He remembered the name of the song. There was some kid song that she had, or an album at the time that was popular. And I guess so during that phase, she was always bringing up a bunch of kids on stage to sing this song. And I was one of those kids.
When do you start hearing something that resonates with you that you actually like?
Late 80s, early 90s. I just remember being on the bus going to elementary school and hearing Michael Jackson's Bad album, the Cocktail soundtrack with the Beach Boys song, Kokomo, the B-52's Cosmic Thing album of Love Shack. I think somebody gifted that cassette tape to me at a fourth or fifth grade birthday party of mine. And I was just like, what is this? It's just a weird record to give. Like, I mean, fifth grade, I don't know how old you are then, but you're young, you know? And I was just like, what is this? And that, you know, Love Shack at the time was a top 40 massive radio hit. You know,
right.
We had two stations in our area. Wink 104 was like the top 40 station, and 105.7 The X or The Edge was like the rock station. And so Wink 104 played all the top 40 hits, and Love Shack was on there.
So did you have the type of youth pastor that says, well, if you like this kind of music, you'll love this kind of music?
By 1991, 92, when I was really involved in youth group, like in seventh grade, eighth grade, we had Interlink music in our youth group. And our youth pastor would get boxes of cassettes and then CDs. And we didn't have a big youth group. And so he knew that I liked music and would just start giving me things. And that's when I got turned on to the Tooth and Nail catalog, a band called Wish for Eden. And then it was just like the doors opened up. And I had already listened to the Michael W. Smith records. The first tape I ever bought was either Michael W. Smith, Eye to Eye, or The Big Picture. And then I went hard into his catalog and then saw DC Talk open up for him a couple times. And that opened me up to the mainstream Christian pop of what was happening with Michael W. Smith and DC Talk. But then it was Wish for Eden and the Tooth and Nail world that just really opened the doors.
Before you went to college, did you have an inkling of what you wanted to do, or did you discover that in college into graduation?
When I graduated high school, I was, you know, going to concerts and things like that. But there was a music business course. The first 2 years of my college, I went to a community college, and there was a music business course that was offered. And that was really the thing that was like, oh, you can do this for a living. And I interned at a record store, Christian record store, believe it or not, that just like, it was revolutionary. If you think about it, back then, Christian music stores were really just a small section in a bookstore. And a friend of mine had worked that music section in a bookstore in Harrisburg, and he opened up his own music store, all music, called Cross Selections. His name is Chris Roof. I interned there for an entire semester and spent so much money. He would say, let's order this from Tooth and Nail, let's order this from Pamplin and from Essential and Goatee. And we were on the phones ordering stuff, and I would get a discount. I just spent every single thing I had on music. And that was really it. And then I got to meet bands that local bands and then manage the local band, went on tour.
Whoa. You managed a local band. Who was this?
This band name is terrible. They were called Devoted Molded out of Hanover, Pennsylvania.
Devoted
Molded.
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 What kind of music?
At that time, so that was mid to late 90s. It was alternative punk rock. You know, they were big fans of Nirvana and Plank Eye was a big band on Tuesday Now. They were huge fans of that. Weezer. And so the music was a kind of combination of all that, you know, garage, alternative punk rock, whatever you want to call it.
So you found yourself in the back of a van traveling with these guys?
Summer of 99, we packed up a van. We, no air conditioning. We took out the last two bench seats, built a shelf so we could throw the gear underneath and then sleep up top. And then we had one bench left and then the driver and the passenger. And we cut a hole in the roof and put a little wind-up sunroof so we could get some air circulation in the top of the van. And drove across the country and played a bunch of shows until our van broke down outside Las Vegas and then had to come home.
Did that give you a clearer picture of, I think I could manage bands, or I want to be in the business, but I don't want to do that part of it?
Well, that's what was great about college. My first 2 years, I worked at a newspaper because I really thought I was going to go into journalism, newsprint or radio. The first 2 years of college, I worked at a newspaper and realized, yeah, I did it for 2 years, working my way up from sports editor to be editor-in-chief, quickly realized, yeah, I don't want to do that. When I transferred to Penn State, I started in print there again, and next door to the newspaper was an old radio station. They're like, it hasn't been on air in a year. So I took it over, went from AM to FM and ran a rock station at Penn State 2 years and then quickly realized, yeah, I wouldn't want to do that for a living either. So I got to experience things before I got out of school of this was great. It gave me context, but I don't want to do that for a living. But working with the bands, I'd promoted shows at Penn State and got to know other local bands. A band called the Rain Children, Jawbone Hill, where Jawbone Hill was massively influential for me. And getting to know those artists and work with them was definitely a thing of like, okay, I want to be in music. But I didn't know what part yet until I came to Nashville.
Did you graduate and then come to Nashville? How does it go?
So I graduated from Penn State. That summer, I went to the Creation Music Festival, which I'd always gone to my whole life. And my dad said, you should treat it like a job fair. So take your resume, pass it around. Friend of mine named Val Weidman was working for WJTO, which is a great station in central Pennsylvania. She introduced me to, I can't remember this young girl's name, but she was working merchandise for Rick Denham, who was running Denham Trading Company. And they did merchandise for DC Talk all during their tours and Audio Adrenaline. Anyway, she told me, hey, there's a guy named Randy Spencer who's managing a band called PAX 217, and he's looking to hire somebody. A couple weeks later, my dad and I get in a car and we drive to Nashville so I can meet with Randy Spencer. And he offered me a job, but there was things like there was no insurance. It just didn't feel right. We had extra copies of my resume in the car. And my dad said, why don't you just take this around? You have a John Rubin CD in the back of the car here. There's an address on there for Goatee Records. Let's just take your resume over there and just see what happens. And they offered me an internship on the spot. Another friend of mine was working telesales, if you remember what that was, at Provident. Guy named Steve Weaver, and he said, look, I think you'll learn more at Goatee Records about what you want to do. You'll see more facets of the industry, every department, instead of just working at management. And I'm glad he told me to do that. So I took the internship, unpaid internship at Goatee. There was no rules back then, so I interned 9 to 5 every day, 40 hours a week, and then waited tables at a diner 6 nights a week to make ends meet.
Who hired you at Goatee? Who is the original person that said, yeah, come on board?
Eddie Boer, who's still one of my best friends to this day. He hired me. He loved my journalism background and at the time was creating an internet department at Goatee to run Goatee.com and the artist websites. And so he hired me part-time. So I did the internship in the diner for about 2 or 3 months. And then Eddie hired me part-time at the end of 2000. I think so November, December, I was part-time to run internet marketing. And then it went full-time January 2001, and they moved me into other marketing things, festivals and promotions and things like that.
So just in case someone goes, well, what's Goatee Records? That is a label formed by Toby Mac and his cousin, Joey, late 90s?
1993, it was established as a production company. They made the first Out of Eden record. They were shopping it around. Everybody said no. And so like, well, we might as well start a record label. And they started Goatee Records in the basement of Toby's house.
Do you remember the first time you were in a room with the guy that you used to see on stage and you loved every song that they sang? Do you remember that day?
I remember walking in the office and coming around the corner to the front door, to the lobby, and him walking in, I was just like, oh, shoot. it's him. And he was really cool. And I remember my first week as an intern, I walked around the corner, I was introducing myself to staff members, and Mike McLaughlin, who was the A&R at the time, he said, so you want to get a job here? And I was like, if it happens, it'd be awesome. He's like, yeah, not going to happen. And it just, it motivated me. And then they just hired a bunch of people. But I told myself, look, I'm going to give it till December to see if this thing pans out. It panned out to be a part-time job. And then give this thing 3 to 5 years and just see what happens. Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought it would have turned into a 20-plus year career.
20-plus years at Goatee.
Yes, sir.
At Goatee, give me, in your opinion, in your tenure, some roster highlights of that 20-plus years.
Getting to start Mono vs. Stereo was a dream come true. I always wanted to have my own record label. And when I pitched the idea in 2002, I'd only been there 2 years. I was a punk kid. And I just felt so convicted that there needed to be other artists that we could work with lower budgets to make records, a lot like the way Tooth & Nail was doing it. And they gave me a shot. I couldn't believe, I'll never forget sitting in Joey Elwood's old Mercedes in the Goatee parking lot and saying, look, I'm going to do this. Either you guys can support this or I'm going to quit and take out a loan and do this. I was so convicted and I can't believe I was doing it. But they believed in me. And I think because of my passion, and they backed everything financially, but gave me complete creative control to give it a name, to work on the logo, to sign the artists. And that was just, I mean, in that time, that was just unheard of. Especially after them starting another sub-label and it didn't really work out. It kind of fizzled out real quick. I never thought they would back another record label, and they did. And that's definitely highlight number one for sure.
And you had access to some smart minds around you to go, hey, I've got a question about this. What would you do in this situation? Give me on the roster at Mono vs. Stereo. If I want to go down a path to listen to something, give me a couple artists.
My favorite record I've ever been A&R for all time is a band called Gasoline Heart. The record is called You Know Who You Are. It came out in August of 2006, so it's just celebrated its 15th anniversary. That record to me is my favorite record I've ever been a part of. It's just a classic record. It's timeless. It's Tom Petty. It's The Wallflowers. It's just great songs. And Louis DeFabrizio, who's the main guy in that band, is just an incredible songwriter. We made the record with Steve Albini, who worked with Nirvana and the Pixies. It's one of my biggest regrets that I did not go up and go to the studio because it was up there in Chicago. I didn't go because the guys at the time were really rowdy. And I was fearful that if I went up there, this would not go well. And we may not get a lot done because we had a short time to make the record. But that by far is my favorite record. The second thing I would say would be a band called Chasing Victory, their album called Fiends. They were kind of early in the screamo phase early on, but then they made this record Fiends in 2007. And the production, the instrumentation, everything about it for the scene at that time was just totally different. The band broke up shortly after the record came out, and it was a real bummer. But there's been a lot of write-ups in alternative press, a lot of other scene bands that are now massive that say that that record was extremely influential for them and was groundbreaking at the time. And I would totally agree with that.
Do you have any stories about the one or the ones that got away?
The Kickstarter for Mono vs. Stereo was there was three bands that had come across Goatee that a buddy of mine really wanted to sign at Goatee. And at the time, Goatee just said no. And that was the kickstart for me to like, okay, I got to find a home for these. And it was a band called Bleach. They had just gotten out of their deal with Forefront. A band called Holland, H-O-L-L-A-N-D, some brothers from Texas. And there was a band called Spoken that had just come off, I think it was Gray Dot Records or RX Records. And all of them were looking for a label home. And we really wanted to sign them. And Goatee just wasn't able to. And those were the bands that I was like, man, we were missing something here. But I don't know if I would say those are the ones that got away. Those are just the ones that really kickstarted the Mono vs. Stereo vision and stuff.
You turned me onto a record years ago. The Showdown?
The Showdown, Temptation Come My Way.
Yes.
Yep. That record is by far the best sounding record that I think I've ever been a part of. That thing is so stinking heavy. It's amazing. The band went from their first record in 2004. We made it for like 10 grand. Doesn't sound very good, but it was a complete mixture of Southern metal, European death metal, 80s metal. And then by the second record, they'd done really well. And so we made this massive rock record, and they stopped screaming and they were just singing. And it is just heavy. It's brutal. And it's awesome.
In the eye of the storm, you remain in control. In the middle of the war, you guard my soul. You alone are the anchor. When my sails are torn, your love surrounds me. In the eye of the storm.
Brian Stevenson's song, Eye of the Storm, when that took off 5 years ago and was number one for, I don't know, 16 weeks or something like that. That to me is another one of just what that guy had been through as an artist and how many times people had written him off. That song exploding was just incredible to see. And then what that's done for him and his family. And then just to see how it's translated later. I mean, just a few years ago, it was in the VBS curriculum that my boys were going to in a summer church. And it was like, we're at this point now. It was so awesome to see that. And I just have always cherished what that song has done for people in their darkest moments and for him. So yeah, that'd be number two.
What's it like having an icon in CCM music as a boss?
It's crazy, man. I mean, Joey's really my boss on the day-to-day level, and Joey's an icon in our industry. You know, he's the one that's in the office every day. He's the one that's running the staff and running the ship. You know, Toby is the creative visionary of the label and brings in the talent. I myself and another coworker work alongside with him when we sign an artist to work on developing them and stuff. But man, Toby's awesome. He's just, I don't know, you know, man, he's just, nobody can say a bad thing about Toby Mac or Joey Elwood. And when you've been in music that long and nobody can say a bad thing about you, that says something about your character, about who you are as a father, a husband, boss. That's the thing that always blows me away. How many artists fizzle out in music, right? And Toby has had a career forever. And to me, that's not just about like big songs. That's about character. You have to have an incredible family around you, incredible team at your management, every level. And, you know, a lot of it, I think, too, is that Toby doesn't have a lot of yes men around him. I know I'm not one of them. We battle a lot, but I think he respects that. And I think other people in his life that are not yes men that tell him truth, that's a good thing.
How do you get a record deal in 2021?
I probably tell people not to sign a record deal nowadays, just because I really feel like there's a lot of artists that are successful that are not on record labels. Just being on a record label doesn't mean instantaneous success. I think you have to really want what a national platform can bring an artist. A lot of artists are great in their hometowns, great in their state, great in their region. But if you want to be on a record label, you have to want to play from anywhere from San Diego, California to Bangor, Michigan to like wherever. Everything that comes along with it. You're partnering with a record label, a management company, a booking agency. And so you have to be willing to give up something to everybody involved and then work even harder to account for all that. If you want to be an artist that doesn't want to partner and give up anything and just do it completely 100% your way, then you should probably just stay an independent artist. And there's nothing wrong with that, the way the music industry is nowadays. But if you want to be on radio, if you want to be on big tours, then you have to be willing to partner with a lot of different people to make those things happen.
A lot of moving mechanisms.
Yeah. Okay. Joey says it great to a young artist when you come in. You're starting kind of like four businesses. You're starting your songwriting career, your publishing, you're starting merchandising, you're partnering with a management company, you're starting your touring mechanism and booking. You're starting multiple things. It's not just one thing. And you have to look at it that way.
Final question. We've known each other quite a while.
Yep.
Ask me something.
Wow. Man, that's tough. Favorite Notre Dame football game you've been to?
Here's one out of left field. Okay. When Notre Dame beat UConn in basketball.
Ooh.
Matt Doherty's 1 year at Notre Dame before he was pulled away to North Carolina. UConn was number one. 9,000 to 12,000 arena was sold out. I mean, I'm getting chills even talking about it. It was electric.
Awesome.
And his charisma brought something to that team. Troy Murphy was on that team. Matt Carroll was on that team. David Graves, Ryan Murphy, who coaches now at Notre Dame.
Still on my bucket list to get to a game at Notre Dame.
We should get you up here.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network? Leave some feedback, write a review, hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?
I appreciate you, pal. We're all done here.
Love you, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. All right.